Hi everyone, you're very welcome back to What's the Story podcast. DG Transport Tullamore, the Midland's leading haulage specialist. You can trust our state-of-the-art fleet to deliver your business for you. We cover 24-hour nationwide delivery and collection, European deliveries, warehousing and pickup and packaging service. Give David or Joe a call on 086 859 7132 or find us on Facebook and see how DG Transport can deliver your business across Ireland today. DG Transport Tullamore. We pick it, pack it and dispatch it.
Broadcasting live from the little town of Clara, County Offaly, it's What's the Story with Lloyd Bracken. Get in touch today through all our social channels and have your say. Oh, and thanks for listening. Now it's over to you, Lloyd. What's the story?
Hi everyone, you're very welcome back to What's the Story podcast. Of course, it's me, Lloyd Bracken, here as usual. It's great to hear that intro again there. I didn't think we'd hear it again for another little while, but we're back. We had the summer off. Of course, lots happened in the summer. We welcome a little arrival, Layla. So I'd just like to mark that. So welcome Layla to the Bracken household, and she might be listening to the podcast. She might even be presenting a podcast in a few years. Who knows? But it's great to be back. I know you probably thought I deserted you, but we didn't. And we have some brilliant podcast coming up. I have some great guests that I can't wait to announce over the next couple of weeks. We have giveaways, the whole lot. If you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, you can do so through Facebook Messenger, Littletown Media, or you can email littletownmed@gmail.com. Right, we're getting straight on to this podcast. I have two Clara legends here with me. Yes, legends. And we're going to talk about the great Jimmy Hughes' pub, mystery tours, characters, the nights that was there, and so much more in this podcast. We'll get straight to it. It's a pleasure to introduce to you Jimmy Hughes and Crane Slammon. What's the story?
Well, Lloyd, how's it going?
Hello, guys.
How are you doing, Lloyd?
Very welcome, lads. Thanks for joining me. And welcome to Raheen.
Oh, great.
Have you ever been in Raheen before?
I'm living in it.
You are indeed. Everyone thinks you're in Ahamore, but we'll have to point that out now. Lads, it's lovely to have you here, as I said. It's our first one back in a couple of months. First of all, we must mention congratulations to Shane Lowry for getting on the Ryder Cup team.
Delighted for him.
I know you're a big sportsman. And, of course, off the under-20s.
Fabulous.
Great chair.
The three lads are on with me here in 2 weeks' time. So
that's great.
Jimmy, we're going to start with yourself. You're a Tullamore man.
Correct.
Take us back. What? Give me some of your early childhood memories.
Well, now. Went to the local convent school up on the convent road. That's where I used to go there from my grandmother's house normally in the mornings. From there to the Masters, and from there to the Christian Brothers, and from there to the next school, DEW, Williams's. Worked at Williams's for a long time. Tried university for a year. Didn't work out. Went back to Williams's. And all along the line, I felt like I'd like to have my own business. So I did a bit of part-time book work for a couple of different businesses at the time. Joe Bracken had a flower shop. I did books for him. Jerry Conway was involved with car parts business down in Haifa. And I did a bit of book work for him. And I felt I'd be able to run a business. And I remember at the time I tried to buy a premises in Henry Street in Tullamore, and I had a bid of 27,000. It was after organising the money and all on this premises, and a fellow went in with a bid of 500 more than me,
right.
And I couldn't. That was it.
So at that time, 500 was.
That was the difference between me getting that.
Right.
That's a thriving supermarket now today. Yeah. And then after that, I fancied, before there was ever one in Tullamore, I wanted to open a record shop.
Wow.
And I couldn't, that fell through too.
I was looking for Jojo on the bias, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Really, number one every week. You'd be scanning the whole thing.
So anyway, from there, the opportunity came up. We heard Jack Cavell was selling. So anyway, after a lot of wheeling and dealing, the thing came through. And we opened up in 1984, I think it was, January. Now, we were to open on my birthday, but it didn't work out, which was the 20th. The 20th was my birthday. I was born on my father's birthday.
Right.
So,
okay. Tell us a little bit about your parents. And are you from a big family?
A family of five. My father, for a long time, had to work in England. He actually had to leave as such. He worked as a baker. He was a baker in Tullamore all his life. Worked for a number of the different bakeries. Wages was very poor at the time, and he was a shop steward, and he fought to get extra rises. and he got victimised on account of it and lost his job after getting a raise for the boys and had to go to work in England and was in England for a long, long time during my lifetime, you know. Okay. So my mother was born in Chapel Lane. And in fact, if you looked out her door in Chapel Lane and you looked up to where the convent or where the canal was, the door across the canal was my father's house.
Right.
So the minute she opened her door, so whether that was it to do how it met.
It was written in the stars.
I don't know.
Yeah. She had no chance. No, I get
Crane, we go to you. Well, first of all, a lot of people ask me, where did Crane get the name? Crane.
I got the
this
name.
This is an exclusive now.
This is an exclusive. Well, a few people know. Playing cards in Carey's one night, and I happened to be sitting beside Eugene Glynn. It was a nine. Well, most people would know what that was. And Boher Flanagan happened to be a partner of Eugene Glynn's. And Eugene, Lord rest him, was short-sighted. He used to have to hold the cards very far away from his face. And one night, sitting beside him, I happened to look across to tell Eugene it was his play. And it looked to Boher like I was looking into his hand. And Boher shouted across the table, "Slammin', stop looking at my partner's hand with a neck on you like a crane." And so, that's it.
Take the Boher.
Well, I tell you, I would have never have guessed that.
That's exactly where that name came from. And Boher confided in me years later, although I don't remember it, that I christened him the Boher.
Oh, dear, oh dear.
One night down the yard in Carey's, as everyone remembered where you refreshed yourself with the smell of bleach, he confided in me whether he was high in the bleach or whether he meant it. But
John, what's your earliest memories growing up?
Well, sure, I went to the National School and my mother and father worked in Good Buddies. I did a year in the tech. And back then, at that age, once you had parents working in Good Buddies, there was always a summer job. So I got into Good Buddies.
A bit of nepotism.
Yes, and I was earning money. And I didn't have the novelty of Jimmy, like going to college. I left Good Buddies and went to Jimmy's. Jimmy went to college, I went to Jimmy's.
Very good.
Yeah.
So, John, were you from a big family then? Tell us a little bit about your parents then.
Well, I think it was 14 on my father's side, and I think 4 stillbirths. There was 18 altogether. And my mother's, there was 4 sisters and a brother. And my mother's only one of them left now. And honestly, I don't know how many's left on my father's side. A lot of them are gone, but so many of them went to England in the day. I think there might be 1 or maybe 2 left of it. That's about it.
Wow. I've got to tell you something better now that I know about. I knew your mother and father before I knew you.
I used to go
to the Harriers on a Sunday night,
yeah,
and they were great, and they were picked out as two of the best dancers in
the hall.
And a load of Clara people like that went in. Used to be fabulous on a Sunday
night. What would be going on in the Harriers or something? A disco or
this would be a dance. Now,
dance
it came for everyone.
Waltzed
men. Mm. But there was a band that came up from Kilkenny, your dad would have known them, called the Four Aces. And they used to put on a floor show before dancing would start. And they dressed up as black and white minstrels. They were fantastic.
Wow.
They put on a show at an hour and then it was dancing. And there was a fork supper. You had to have a fork supper, you know. Fabulous.
So Jimmy, so I'm getting from you to your parents. Education was important from
Well, my father wanted, yes, he wanted. Now, I had a feeling at the time that the business he was in, he was only a baker working for, would have been lucrative, you know, even though the money wasn't bad, the wages. But I had a funny feeling about the bakery business, you know. And I saw him working in England when I went over on holidays. I saw him work. And I had a feeling I might go that way about it, you know. And I'll tell you what I used to do at home. That was Christmas. Coming up to Christmas, my father did a lot of home baking, cakes for people. And the house, there was one room in the house taken up with preparations for the baking the cakes in September, putting them aside and preparing them and leaving them aside, icing them in October and November. And I'd be in the room with him. And I tell you the way it was. There was a bulb in the kitchen was a 100-watt bulb. We'd have to bring that into the room and switch the other bulb for light for him when he'd be doing the icing of the cake. You know. Very intricate. And something to go wrong, he'd let us swear of, you know. Very top class wedding cakes. So he was excellent. I have to say he was a top class tradesman, you know. But still he wanted me to go to whatever. Mm. Now I worked for a year in Williams before. I couldn't afford to go to university either and saved a few pounds, and he supported me then. And I know when I didn't pass the first exam, he was very upset about himself and he kind of berated me for it. I don't blame him. Yeah. I probably should have studied harder at it. But anyway, That was it. That was a year.
So what was the reaction when you told your family then you were coming to Clara to open a pub?
Oh, well, that was a bummer.
I was already in Clara. I knew the scene. I was in Clara from 1971.
Right.
You know, I was.
Clara scene. I met Clara. I love that. I knew the scene.
I met Clara in 71, or yeah. I met Liz in 71 in the Central Ballroom. You know, and from there that worked on. I met loads of other, and then when we. I'd be coming over to Clara every weekend. Okay, I preferred to be in Clara at the weekend.
So you're saying you were accepted in Clara first before you...
Oh, God.
He walked into a pub in Clara and he saw pound signs.
He saw you.
Yeah, oh, fairness, that was a bit early now. But,
I'll have to say, when we came to Clara first, Whites is where it was would have been my pub. And all down the years, and even when I had the pub myself, if I wanted a pint, I went round to the other pubs, but Whites would be me, where I'd go. But when I started going with Liz... And we went over on a Friday night. If you weren't in White's Lounge at 8 o'clock on a Friday night, you wouldn't get a seat there. It was just to be jammed.
Unreal.
I know that, because if you're working in Jimmy's at 2 o'clock of a Saturday, you didn't get a seat.
So, John, there was loads of pubs in Clara at the time, wasn't there?
I still say it. I'm telling all the youth of the town now, because I'm well in with all the kids, and I'm trying to explain to them that there was 10 pubs in Clara and one chipper. And now there's 10 places. Well, we'll say I go back a few weeks before the restrictions were lifted. There was 10 places to eat and one pub.
Yeah.
Talk about reversal.
Why do you think that is? Do you have any reasoning for it?
There's a lot.
They're all hungrier than they are thirstier.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you what has played an awful part in my mind now. And I've been an ex-publican.
Yeah.
I feel terrible. Sorry. First of all, the COVID thing. The way the pubs were treated. The publicans were treated. And the drink driving thing. Now, I'm all for health and safety. But this thing on a Monday morning, it killed the drinking on a Sunday. It absolutely... Sunday used to be a fabulous day in the pubs. I know people are terrified now in case they're pulled on a Monday morning going to work with a few pints. Now, I'm not sure whether that's...
Well, he's right, because I was hardly able to get up on a bike of a Monday.
The electric bike, that's...
Oh, well, that's different. That does its own thing.
That kills that one.
Jimmy, do you remember your first day behind the bar...
I do. Well, before, you see, when I was in Tullamore, I drank in Mary Burns' pub. Did you know Mary Burns' pub?
Where was that?
Mary Burns' pub is where, right opposite where the old co-op was, opposite Joe Finley's shop. You know that big pub? It's a big pub now, but it's closed.
Well, it was the Wolf Trap, I think, wasn't it?
It's the Wolf Trap.
Or Pat's Bar.
Yeah, that was there. Mary Burns, fabulous place. Half Clara knew it then. I met a lot of Clara fellas in it. Yeah. The Doherty's always went to it. But Mary Burns showed me how to pull pint. At that time, you had to... there was something in pulling a pint.
It was a trade, a bar person,
was a trade. Yeah. You had to... So anyway, I learned. And the first night then, a friend of mine from Tullamore, who I worked with in Williams's, Jerry Smith, and his wife, fair play to them, came over and helped me out the first night. And I never really said thanks to them since. I haven't seen them in a long time. So I just want to say that after ever hearing it. Jerry Smith and his missus, thanks very much for getting me on the road.
Well, you're beside me now. You can thank me for sending you on holidays every year.
So go back, Jimmy, your first day. What we're going to do in a minute, I'm going to get Crane to describe what Jimmy used, but essentially was like everything about it.
Kind of
give us a visual on it. So Jimmy, your first day, you're opening the door. I mean, you're not a stranger in town, so you know certain people, and the word is out. Jimmy Hughes is open. What's this going to be like? You know, there was always a bit of kind of like,
strangely enough, the first week was quiet enough. Now there was a good few around the first night, and then, you know, it got to where I noticed if you went to another pub, it was the same as what they were. There was no mad rush or anything like that. It was a thing that gradually built up, you know. And in fact, basically, I'd say it took till about March. Now, I was in it, and for the 17th of March, Johnny came in to give us a handout behind the bar.
The rest is history.
After that. Yeah. I mean, he just took to it like a duck to water. Really?
And did he do bar work before that?
Never touched a pint in his life. Never touched a bar or was behind the bar, no. And he just took to it like and loved it from the word go.
Of course, there is some people that might know Johnny was your brother in law as well.
Correct, yeah. You know, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And mentioning that, I mean, down through the years, we didn't have many outside bar people because there was Mary Brennan, there was Tricia, Tina helped us out at times. You know, and then Liz upstairs would come down. Eilish, from the time she could stand on top of it.
I remember Eilish.
Up on top of the crate. She knew everyone in the place.
Yeah.
And Mary became a very good bar person and worked with Nigel when I left to raise a few pounds towards her schooling in college, when she went to college.
Brilliant. So, So, Crane, you take us back now. It's a Friday night downtown. Jimmy, who's in the heat of the action. Right. Who can we see? What can we do?
Everything. So you're entering Jimmy Hughes' of a Friday night.
We're walking in the door. We're knocking on the door.
Well, you never had a knock to get in. You had to ring Johnny,
You had to ring to get out, wasn't it?
You had to ring Johnny some mornings to open the pub to get in, but that's different. That's future. That's further on. It was always awkward to get into Jimmy's. The doorway was a kind of a shape like the letter
sideways, yeah.
Yeah, you had to come in sideways, so you were never aware what was waiting for you. But Pat O'Hines would always be in the corner.
Over on the left.
Yeah, a steadmate. And then you might have the card game going to your left-hand side, or to be wafting them, or in the process of, and there'd be a puff of smoke all around the bar, and then the numerous characters the whole way down. So it was a free-for-all at that stage. The hardest part was getting in, because you didn't know what was facing you.
Not getting out.
No. Well, getting out was hard too. I can vote for that.
Didn't want to go out. Yeah.
Who else was there? So I had a post on Facebook recently and people mentioned all the different characters down through the years and all the different names mentioned. Paddy, Willie and Pat O'Hines you mentioned. Who else was in the...
Oh my God.
Can I
tell you a story about Paddy Willie?
Do, please.
Oh my God. I was there one day with Johnny and... Myself and Johnny having a chat, and like I'm after saying the hard entry with the L-shaped door, Johnny says to me, "Crane, there's someone trying to get in there," and I went to hop off the chair, and Paddy Willis took his head in and says to Johnny, "Give us a half one and a glass of Guinness." And sure, Paddy never drank a glass of Guinness, and Johnny was saying to me, "What does he want a glass of Guinness for?" And he was struggling in the doorway, whatever he was trying to get in. Yeah. And Johnny put the glass of Guinness and he was filling there. He put the whiskey on the counter and he was topping off the glass of Guinness. And next thing Paddy let us show him, "Come in here, you fecker, you." And he pulled in the Shetland pony. And myself and Johnny looking at one another. And Paddy Willie, he took up the glass of whiskey and threw it off. And Johnny says to him, "So you never drink Guinness, Paddy?" "Oh no, the Guinness is for himself." And he held the glass of Guinness down and the horse started licking the head of the Guinness out of the glass. Unbelievable.
That was a pony. He came in another night with a goat.
A goat,
And the smell in the place was unbelievable. And what did Johnny do that night going home? Tied it to the back of a trailer and let Gerald drive it up to Marion Square, or they brought up putting Gerald Harden.
I'll tell you a quick story. My father was telling me the other day, I know it's your podcast, I'm not taking over, but my father, we were young and said some of them wanted a pony or something, you know. His father said, "Yeah, I know the man. Down to Paddy Williams. Paddy, one of the kids is looking for a pony. Would you be able to sort it out? Leave it with me, Paddy. Don't buy off anyone else," he said to my father. My mother and father were home one Friday night watching Kenny Live or something. The knock came to the back door of the house. My father answered the door anyway. Paddy Willie was there with six ponies in the yard, all on ropes. He says.
The battle of the slow horse fair.
Mentally, he says, in the yard, six of them. You know? Anyway, he bought one after that. That's the character.
But another story now with Paddy Willie. Right, yeah. And back then, midnight mass at Christmas was a big thing. 12 o'clock mass. I'm sure anyone that was...
That was real midnight mass.
Real
not midnight mass at 9 o'clock.
No. The real one, the 12 o'clock one. And anyone that had kids maybe the next day that was maybe on the beer would go to that so they could have the lay on after the kids waking or whatever. So we were in it one night anyway, and the next thing, the priest was about 10 minutes into the mass, the next thing, clump, clump, clump. And we all looked around, and here was Paddy Willie coming up the church with a Clydesdale horse.
In mass?
In the church, the middle of the church. And the priest stopped to stay in the mass and said, "Mr. McLaughlin, you can't bring a horse into the church." And Paddy McLaughlin says to the priest, "Wait till I tell you, Father, he's more of a Catholic than half in here." Finish that mass.
People probably know as part of the nativity or something.
Maybe he was out of crib.
Jimmy, when you took over the bar first, did you have to do much with it or...?
A little bit of cleaning up. And the lounge, see, Jack was after doing a lovely job on the lounge. He got John Duffy and Johnny Kelly. I think Johnny Kelly done that round counter. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah,
the
round counter. Yeah, with the green letter.
It just was suited lovely that you could get around it nice and handy and you could chat.
Used
people.
To remind me of Cheers, you know, the pub Cheers.
Yeah, and people could chat across the counter and that whole thing went on. No, we'd very little to do with that end of it. A bit of tidying up. But when the bar then hadn't been done in a long time, we started to reorganise that. A lot of the old people who went into Jack wanted to see this bar open. So we got the bar into a kind of a good state before we got the pool table. There was you could go in on a Sunday night and there could be 20 people in the bar alone. The likes of John Duffy and Margaret, Tommy Berry and the wife, Harry Little and the wife, Michael Kelly from Marion, or for Boland's Terrace, Big Jim Colgan, Tommy, Mary Kate would be there,
Kevin Kane,
Kevin would be there, another one, Wat Kane had come in with Tom Cunningham. The bar on its own. And the Irish used to look after them. Wow. And they wanted no one in the Irish looking after them. Wow. And we'd have a crowd up in the lounge. And yeah. I mean, if I was to start mentioning the people in the lounge now, I'd leave someone out and I'd offend someone.
You know? My brother said to me recently, everyone, he said he was in Hughes's one Sunday morning. He said there was 28 Brackens in it.
Yes, quite all around Josie. Yeah. You wonder where Johnny Bracken got? Josie was the greatest storyteller. Yeah, sure, that, I'll tell you. He entertained the whole of the factory when he worked there, you know. And the jokes, Johnny, and Johnny played more jokes on his father. You wouldn't believe the joke. I couldn't tell them, some of them. The jokes were terrible. I'll tell you just one story now that he did. The Lord of Mercy and Essie Malloy died up and she was, you know, a relation, you know. So at the funeral, the four boys were carrying her up the graveyard. Johnny was in front with his father or Johnny was behind with Jojo and Gerard was in front. And Johnny nodded over to Jojo and the lift in the coffin. Watch this. And he started to tilt the coffin towards Josie and they're going up, walking up. And, oh Lord, Josie. Oh, yes, Johnny. Shock.
So causing going jokes even
the whole way, going
even the dead wasn't safe for Johnny.
Oh, terrible.
Crane, you must have some great... Of course, we can't talk about characters, obviously, about Johnny, because in my mind, and no offence to you, Jimmy, but Johnny was Jimmy Hughes, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, you know, in fairness. Yeah.
For years.
Yeah,
he was. You must have some great stories and memories of Johnny.
Sure,
Where do you start?
Sure. Unbelievable.
Well, one thing, he was always tricking people, wasn't he?
Yeah, but well, I have to say it in front of Jimmy. Jimmy's pub wasn't just a pub. It was a cinema, it was a joke shop, and it was a diner.
Yeah, diner.
Because
yeah.
any day of the week, you go in and lizard have food on the counter.
Yeah, fabulous.
It was food for everyone.
Fabulous.
The joke shop, whoever went on holidays had to bring Johnny back either a farting cushion or something that blew up or something
that electric lighter. Fluid.
Something, a squirting pistol.
A banger.
Yeah. Yeah. And what did I say? The cinema.
Yeah.
And that film that came out, The Match, from Aherlow.
Oh, fantastic.
That was on for a month, solid.
Yeah.
Your man cursing and blinding on the sideline. Unbelievable. The first time I saw The Commitments, I walked into the pub one morning to get a cure, and Johnny handed me this film. Bring that home, he says, and watch it before you come back up here. I yep myself at home watching The Commitments in the pub for a month after that.
There was another night I had, I don't know where a video came from, of an old-fashioned tatching, or a trashing. And Jim Colgan walked in this night and he still had the counter. What's that on it? And it went on for 3 hours and he sat through it. And when it was over, he said, will you put that on again? He said,
three hours.
Fabulous, though. A lovely thing to see, you know.
It is brilliant.
That didn't get to repeat.
So what was the story? Did you someone bring in a different video every week? Or
yeah.
But you see, Nigel Dunn had the video shop anyway.
Right across the road.
And Mick was always designated as... Mick had always had himself...
Pick out something to entertain us.
Yeah. I went into the shop one day and it was midweek and when I walked in, it was only Jimmy and Mick Carey there. And they were after watching Mel Gibson. I think the only love story he had actually made. And I walked in just in the trailers coming up and I said to the two boys, well, boys, Jimmy, give us a pint. Was the film any good? And Mick Carey turned around with the tears in his eyes. Oh, Jesus, it was a great one. And he wiped the tears off his eyes. And when Jimmy was filling the pint, no, Jimmy was a little bit glossy eyed. I don't know whether the gas got him or whether. Unreal.
I tell you, I was saying about a lot of memories come in on Facebook there recently about Jimmy Hughes' pub. One was coming from Jeff McCarthy. He said, once after a Clara Golf Society out, and we went back to Hughes's, my father won a prize, Badger, and everyone shouted, speech, speech. He wasn't one sentence into speaking when Sid Mannering shouted, speak fucking English, Badger. You can't understand the word. He said the whole place just erupted.
Oh, unreal.
That's lovely, though, isn't it? Yeah. I know he was slagging them, but that's brilliant.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Claire Flattery said Derek Mee's discos were brilliant. His gear was set up for days after.
Yeah.
Oh, said herself and Lynn Marlow. Lynn Stewart playing pool down the back. They were great dart.
Everyone played pool down there. Yeah.
Derek Mee was...
Derek,
fantastic, wasn't
Derek it? Was playing in. He was playing the DJ in the nightclub for Danny, you know, on Saturday night. And I says, Derek, I know I've never heard of it anywhere. And I think it was the first place that there was a disco in a pub during normal, let's say, a pub.
Yeah, not no dance floor.
I said to him, Jesus Christ, he says, I never did that. I said, look, just do it. Put on what you think people like. So this particular night, we had it advertised, DJ Derek. And he stuck, a few people had come in and And the old fella called Patcho come in, he put on, put your sweet lips on. He knew exactly to what on put on for every. Imagine he got everyone going. Yeah. And by the end of the night, the place was throbbing. Yeah. Nobody let anyone that come in stayed.
Yeah.
And he turned it up and turned it up, and the window started to vibrate.
Yeah. Unreal.
The place was jammed.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And it just went on from there, you know. Took and Derek got a lot of work out of it.
Yeah, Lord of mercy, the manager then in Hughes, wasn't he? And then all over Clara.
And,
yeah.
And
Derek
not alone,
was the man, Barry Flynn, of course.
Yeah, you know, and not alone did he do the discos. He had a video, and he'd go in behind the counter, and he captured everyone from Patcho to Mary Kate, to Joe Finn, whoever was at the counter.
Where's those videos? That would be great.
That's what I'm looking for. I've been looking for them for years, and I'm hoping maybe Derek's missus. Yeah. Might have them. I didn't approach her yet. Yeah. Or somebody. Now, I know festival things were different. There was other videos done. Young Rex, Alan Rex done a lot. Yeah. And it'd be lovely to get them compiled. People would love to see them.
Yeah, course, yeah.
Ones, you know?
Just when Jimmy says about Derek with the video, myself and Josie Quinlan were on a council, a FOSS scheme years ago. And Vinnie Heaton had gone up and cut the grass in Merrion Square. And of course, Vinnie was always active. So the best he could do was leave the trailer beside, we'll say, two or three mounds in his grass. Of course, we didn't realise Derek was living with the Dunn girl at the time. And unbeknownst to myself and Josie Quinn, Derek was recording us. And he had background music. But basically, I went down to the pub that night anyway. When I went in, Johnny says to me, Jez, Craig, I have a great one.
GDPR then?
I have a great one to show you, right? So I got me pie, Danny, went over, got in front of the telly, a good seat, right? I listened, Johnny pressed play, and next thing. It was literally music. And it was the council trailer, myself and Josie Quinlan, either side of a stack of grass. And both of us were taking it in turns with one hand on the fork, lifting the grass into the trailer. And by the time the fork got to the trailer, it was maybe three blades of grass on the fork. But it was in sync with whatever music he had picked. It was like we were doing, like we could hear the music in Derek's house. And we were doing the fork in sync. I just looked at Johnny and went, there's no one safe, Johnny.
Chris Gagan was in touch. He said, I remember me and Rosie and my late dad coming home from the Ray Minnock's bog one Saturday morning. And of course, we got a thirst on us and popped into Jimmy's. And the crane was there and he had a cooked rabbit. Said that the rabbit didn't last long.
Oh, the cooked rabbit was, yeah.
Siobhan Kelly also said, Crane's car tricks always kept us entertained.
Yes.
Actually, I remember you showing me a car trick. I think it was in the Dolphin at one time.
Right.
And I'm still trying to figure it out.
I had a video back, a video recorder like everyone had back in the 80s. And it was a pair of magicians from Canada, Penn and Teller.
And I remember them, yeah.
Yes, I was actually leaving. One of the rare nights I was at home in time to see this programme. And what they said at the start of the programme was, if you have a video on a blank tape, put it in, we'll be recording a car trick and you'll be able to catch your friends. Of course, I didn't know any of this till I went home that night. I watched the programme and straight away I thought, oh, Hughes is pub. But I needed Johnny in on the trick. So basically what it was, the tape was always in the video. And if someone came in, if I was there, Johnny would say to them, whether to get a drink, and they'd say, or they'd know me and say, Craig, have you heard an old joke? I have nothing at the moment. I have a card trick. Johnny, give us the deck of cards. And of course, the deck of cards would be a normal deck of cards, but the three of clubs would be always on the top. And I'd say to them, take out the deck out of the cards out of the deck and look at the top card. So they'd look at the top card, I'd pour it into the deck, shuffle it, and then I'd proceed to pick out their card. And I'd purposely pick a different card. I'd say to them, the Queen of Hearts, is that your card? And they'd say, no. And I'd say, are you sure? And as soon as I'd say, are you sure? Johnny had pressed play.
On the telly.
On the telly.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
And I'd say to whether it was one person. I remember the pull-up football team came in one Monday, 32 of them, and Sonny Lynam says to me, Crane, give us a joke. Oh. And like that, no, it's card trick. So we got to the stage where, that's not your card. So Johnny pressed play. So I'd say to whoever it was or whoever it was, look up at the television. And when they look up at the television, John Sissons off the Channel 4 News would be talking about the Dow Jones Index, the weather, and then at the end he would just say, and this just in, he'd hold up the three of clubs on the television.
Is this your card?
Is this your card? The day I did it with the pull of the football team, they went running around the pub looking for a hidden camera. They couldn't believe it.
Brilliant.
Well, I'd often walk in and there'd be people from America waiting to see this trick on the television. It was unreal. Yes.
What is
that? Unbelievable.
Right, yeah. Ronan was in touch. He said, I remember one Sunday doing the woman in labour scene. What asking him?
On the mystery tour.
The bar.
Yeah.
The roars of me was something shocking. He said, my father walked in for a pint with Billy Smith. He just looked over the bar and rolled his eyes up to heaven. He asked Billy, was that normal carry on?
But just when you mentioned the rabbit, like, it was a standing order. back when Offaly started doing well in the matches, I organised those buses, and my uncle Josie was alive at the time. And just casually in the pub one day, I'd say to him, "Jez, you know, I'd love a couple of rabbits for the match." And he'd say to me, come on up Friday." And he'd have eight rabbits, paunched and all. I'd have nothing to do when he cooked them. So I used to cook the rabbits of a Saturday, and maybe Sunday morning I'd fry them off or I'd bring them. And they'd be on buses, they were on trains. I remember we got up on a train one day up in the station here, and your man read out that the train was 15 minutes late. I'd eight rabbits, and they were right before we left Clara. The proposals were being thrown out the river, out the window.
You could have ran to them. Jimmy, you might remember this. Kevin Keenan was in touch. My father, Kieran Keenan, started his business there, awfully aluminum or aluminium, whatever you call it. He started very small and developed into a successful business here in Raheen. Yeah. And he said it was fond memories for them living around there.
Well, now, I just to let him know, I don't know whether he knows this or not. He might have been away at the time, but his father did a job for me, a fabulous job for me. The old sign that's still outside the door. It showed up in the Father Niall.
That's it. The Give Every Man His Due.
Tullamore Dew. That was there from Williams' time. And I saw the photograph of the two men putting that up. And I worked with the two of them in Williams'.
Imagine
Jack Keating, which is young Keating that plays the music, his father.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Owens, the drummer's father. His father. Wow. They were the two men that put up. And that was up for a long time. And when I moved in, it was down. And I wondered. And Tommy Berry says, "I have it in my shed." I took it down to paint it.
That's fantastic.
And he painted it for me. And when we went to put it up, the old thing was rusted. And Kevin Keenan, his father, what was his name?
Kieran Keenan
made a frame for it.
He'd be delighted to hear that. That's lovely.
And bolted it up.
And that is
and that's still there.
That's an iconic piece.
Unreal, yeah.
That's
well, you get money for that.
Oh, yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, I just want to bring Jimmy's mind back to something now. And you're reminding me with the rabbits, right? Awfully, we're playing in a match in Croke Park. And Jimmy knew that I was going to have the rabbits on the bus. And Jimmy was coming with his usual crew, Kevin Kine, John Mullins, John Mourne, and himself, right? But Jimmy says to me in the pub, in the course of that week, he says, "I'm going one better than you for the match in Dublin." Of course, we were all wondering what this was anyway. So we got on the bus that morning and Jimmy had a cooked chicken. Now, that was a standard way above rabbits to us, right?
So we
arrived in Dublin and we were drinking in Judge's pub. The pub we normally used to go into wasn't open. And this judge man was standing at the door. He says, "Come on over here, boys." Of course, he saw all us and realised. So we went in and we started playing a nine. And Jimmy was sitting beside me. And there was a break in, we said, dealing the cards. And Jimmy says to me, "I have to go to the toilet." He says, "I can't bring in this chicken with me. Keep an eye on it." So Jimmy went into the toilet. And as soon as he got up off the chair, Josie Quinlan took the chicken, stripped the chicken in a matter of seconds. So we all had a bit of it. It was lovely. And we filled the chicken back up with beer mats and covered it up. Of course, Jimmy came back from the toilet and put the hand down and felt the chicken. Job's a horse. So we went on our way that day. None of us said anything. Jimmy used to sit in the very same seat in the Cusick stand, in the Hogan stand. And the routine the boys had, half time in the match, Jimmy would have a batch loaf buttered and the chicken. And one of the boys would be nominated to go down for the four cups of tea. So the boys come up with the cups of tea. Now back then in Croke Park at half time, the noise wouldn't be too much. It wouldn't be like nowadays, you know, with speakers and, right?
A concert nearly now.
Yeah, you'd hear a pin drop. So we were in the Cusick stand and we knew what was coming, right? And so out of nowhere, all we could hear, Jimmy at the top of his voice, "Quinlan, I'll kill you when I get my hands on you." Jimmy obviously opened the chicken, the bread already, not only bear mats.
Unbelievable. Oh, Jesus.
What was it like going to matches back then? No, Crane, you organised a lot of the buses and that, but tell me some of the people that'll be on them buses and the crack that'll be going on.
Well, you had all the stalwarts here. Josie Quinlan, John Mourne, and Booher, Sean Cook. I'm going back the early years, you know, when Offaly were doing well. And I'd have 13 on the bus. The bus was for 15. And the last two, I had to stop at Emmy Scanlon's house. Her and Frank Lord of Mercy. And we got on the bus at the house because she'd carry out two trays of sandwiches that came to Dublin with us. You couldn't touch them sandwiches on the way to Dublin.
Conway's.
I'd have eight rabbits. Emmy had two trays of sandwiches. And Sean Maloney was working in Bopa in the canning at the time. He'd have two tins of corned beef. We fed half of Dublin.
Conway's, yeah.
Conway's pub in Dublin.
And then a sing-song.
A sing-song, yeah.
We took over Conway's.
There was one photo, I have a tome, and of course people can't see it, but Packy and Shamie Newman sitting beside one another. And Packy has a leg of rabbit. Shamie has a chunk of this corned beef and a tub of sacks of salt. and he's putting the salt on the rabbit and the corned beef for the two of them. Like,
what were the Dublin people thinking when the Clara crowd come up?
Oh, in fairness, rabbits.
They were delighted with us. We were up every second weekend. But what's the football match? It was a hurling match.
Actually, I had this forgotten now. And Christopher, myself and Christopher Gallagher were talking about it the other day, and a man's name, I think I'm pronouncing it right, is it Con Coolahan?
Con Coolahan
used to write for the Evening Press.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Brilliant.
We were in Turles for a match in 1984, the All-Ireland semi-final, right? It was the centenary semi-final. And again, I had rabbits. And Christy Gagan was in the pub. And Christy left and came back after a half an hour. And he came over and he says to me, "Crane, you mind if I have a leg of rabbit? There's a gentleman here I want to give it to." Yeah. And I turned round and I looked at this gentleman. And to me, he was, I thought Christy was after bringing him in off the street. Yeah. A long black Crombie coat and the hair all over the place.
Short ball.
Of course, she wouldn't say no to him. I said, "Christy, sure, give him the leg of rabbit." He said, "This man hasn't had rabbit in years." And he'd be delighted with the... I said, "Give it to him, Christy." And of course, the evening when I said, "Christy, who was that?" And he said, "That was Con Coolahan." He said, "The lad of rights for the press." Yeah. That unreal.
And he gave him a write-up on the paper the next night. He mentioned...
He mentioned Christy.
Christy
yeah.
Clara.
He didn't mention the rabbit, but that's earlier there. But I have... I got a job done in my attic here a couple of years back, and I was shuffling around, and I found programmes and articles from back in the 80s. And in 1981, when Offaly won the first hurling, Con Coolahan back then had the whole back of the Evening Press. Everyone used to queue to buy the paper. And he wrote an article. He was trying to explain to the people reading the paper about how many Offaly people had been in Croke Park the day before. And he summed it up by saying, he said, "I was in Croke Park yesterday." And he said, "There was that many Offaly people in Croke Park." He said, "If an ass fell into a bog hole in Offaly, he'd have drowned."
No one around.
There was no one around to pull him out.
Jimmy, what are your memories?
Yeah.
Well, the first, my greatest memory was I was 16 years of age. Now, I had been at loads of Offaly matches. From 1959, I went to see them been beaten in a league semi-final. And Peter Nolan was playing, I think, that day, centre-back. Mick Ash, I remember him scoring a 50. He was a guard down in Jannan Bridge. But 1964 was a fabulous year. The first minor football All-Ireland championship win. And on the team, five doors up from me, Martin Furlong lived in the street with us. And number five was Liam Duffy, a cousin of mine from down the town. And to be standing at the corner of Moore Street, hanging onto the railings outside Brian Adams' house, you know, the house there with the rails in the corner.
Yeah.
And this that was the first thing I ever saw of that sort of a parade down the town with the band. And thousands of people turned out for that minor. And then they have to go on to 71. A fabulous occasion when they won the first football. But it was a very sad occasion for me. I was up at the match with a whole lot of my friends and we were staying over. And of course, ready to celebrate immediately after the match. And I didn't know, a cousin of mine ran into the house. We weren't going to come home until the next day and be done with the team. An uncle of mine was after dropping dead in Tullamore. Mm-hmm. And when I got home and found out, my uncle Christie, Jimmy Hughes in the Green, his dad, was down in his sister's house, which was Mrs. Talbot's sweet shop. That was my aunt's sweet shop. Right. And he went down there to watch the television. She'd a better television, colour television or something at the time. And he watched the All-Ireland. And as soon as Willie Bryan got the cup, he jumped up and shouted and ran out of the house, down to the Marion Place, only 100 yards away, getting ready to go to celebrate, drop dead at home in the house. And I came home the next day from the match with the crowd, our lads, and up and down, you know. Went up to meet the team coming down with behind the band and the whole lot again. And as I was going up High Street, I met my father home from England just after arriving, going down to his brother's wake. So that was a kind of sad occasion.
Yeah. Celebrate and sad.
Jimmy, I know you're both big GEA men in the hurling and all. I've had a message from Trevor Kelly from the USA. He said, "Good to see a few characters on," he says. "Anyway, please let Jimmy know he was a great hurling man behind the scenes, giving lads lifts to Offaly trials and trainings when we were from the wrong end of the county. And he brought on more young lads that he will never even know because of his efforts." He was a great GEA man. So that was a nice one from Trevor Kelly.
It was great to be involved with all those. Yeah. I was involved with Crane was before I ever done it. He was fabulous involved with hurling. And bringing kids away on mystery tours and all that. Before there were mystery tours and pubs.
Oh, we used to bring them to Croke Park.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you myself, I played in Croke Park once ever in my life.
And that was with me.
Because John Slammon brought me on a school tour.
I used to say to them, when you get older, if you're across the world, wherever, New York or Australia, and you're watching in All Ireland, in the pub, just turn around. He says, oh, I played in Crow Park. You don't have to tell them when or how.
To do. Yeah. Of course, you did treasure hunts and everything. You're great.
That's how, the kids paid for it themselves.
But that's what I meant at the start. You could have had a podcast on your own. We can't get it all in. I'd love to.
Yeah.
And I think you should come back individually some other time.
Well, there's loads,
There's loads. But Daniel Crane, junior A, B and C medals. Not too many can say that.
Well, I have, in the centenary year, as my memory right, Clara were renowned for winning numerous titles in the 80s, underage and everything, but there's only two teams won a medal centenary year. I think it was Dara Scully and the boys under 14 and a junior hurling team that I was on. That's...
Of course, you were manager then of an under 14
fail a team.
All-Ireland.
We won the Fail na Gael. We went up a division and we got beaten very unluckily in the final of the next division the following year, which had never been done before or since. So we were very unlucky. We could have made history. But that team actually won a county final as well.
Right.
So we have our own little...
Very good.
Yes.
Great stuff. I just want to go back to the pub, obviously, for another couple of topics.
Why would you do that?
I know, yeah. The Tuesday nights, particularly the first Tuesday.
Yeah.
You're laughing now. I haven't even got into this. The first Tuesday of every month.
I'll phrase it nicely. The children's allowance night.
Was a very popular... No, before you say it, and I have a little piece of audio here from a guy that used to play in Jimmy Hughes's back at the time, Brendan Keeley.
Oh, nice one.
Footsteps sending shivers through the corridors of my mind. Teardrops forming rivers till my eyes are almost blind.
What can I say about Jimmy Hughes? great guy, wonderful, wonderful man to think of an idea to run me doing a night in his bar in Clara on the first Tuesday of every month. We all know what happens on that day. And it was packed with all of these young wives. And I'd say there could have been a few more for the Tuesday at those nights. But we had a great time. And it was... It was funny and all good humoured and great, great, great entertainment. And Jimmy was flying it out behind the bar. Great man, great respect for him. Worked with him before that in Williams's way back in the day. Other than that, I wish him well. And I met him actually once somewhere, but a mask on it. I didn't recognise him. He recognised me. Gosh, he couldn't miss me anyway. But I just want to wish him well and say thank you for the memories of those evenings. We had some great times. Keep it going. Thank you, Lloyd.
That was the great Brendan Keeley there.
As I said, he mentioned there, going back to Williams, I worked with his dad. I worked with him. I worked with a couple of his uncles. The Keeleys had a fabulous band going way back. And if you remember, think back to Carey's, there was a picture or a poster in Carey's about a dance in the hut.
That's right, yeah.
And Keeley's band.
Yeah, that's right.
They played. They were brilliant musicians, every one of them. You know? So that's really
that was a great song, actually. Yeah. I remember that came out first. Yeah. It was massive.
Oh, yeah. You
know, I used to love the Chosen Nights because Brendan Keeley, of all the musicians that came and played in Clara and did at the time, he was the only one that used to sing Billy Joel's Goodnight Saigon.
Yeah.
And
what a song.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Even to tackle song? That.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Lonesome Boatman, he used to play the music part with the bottom end of a crutch that he had made the holes in. Yeah.
Another little piece of audio here from a little incident now that we won't go too much into, but we'll have a little listen here from Danny Rabbit.
Best wishes to Jimmy and good luck with your podcast with Lloyd. Jimmy and I are the best of friends. When we would want anything in the pub game, we were in opposition with one another for years across the road. We would help out one another with a barrel or a bottle, or if one was short, we never let one another down. But there was an incident, I mentioned this later. There was an incident one Wednesday night in Clara, Jimmy's pub. And I was upstairs in the middle house, and Johnny Bracken run in panicking. There was a whole heap of crowd in the pub, and they were serving themselves. So we went back anyway, and we brought over a few hurls to the pub to see, try and solve the problem. But we didn't have to go with the hurls after, because the guards came in time. Someone rang the guards about the incident. But we restored order anyway. Well, the Crane has plenty of incidents. They used to have a day out every year, the mystery tours. The Crane have an ass load of stuff there. I often heard them telling them. Yeah, Jimmy is a valued member of the nine. We do play in Dolans. We do enjoy the nine, but we're out of it for the last 18. We can't get it fixed. But that might come now in the next week or two, Desi was telling us. We might get back to it. And I'd like to wish Jimmy, he's a proper gentleman, and I wish Jimmy and Liz and family good health and happiness, and look forward to a good game of cards.
Well,
best of luck, Jimmy.
Where do we start there?
Ah, lovely. So where do you start? No, but what he said, great friends down through the years. I mean, he said we were in opposition. We were. But sure, Danny, we'd have a crowd in of a Saturday night. And Danny would say, you can have them till then. Send them over to me and I'll polish them off.
Wow. So was there a good camaraderie between the publicans here?
I know, it was. I had no problems that way. We had our meetings up and down. We had a few differences up and down. But look, the business was a hard business and everyone had to get on about their job. But with the Rabbit family, Nuala and Liz are great friends, you know. The kids, I mean, I worked with Donal, you know. It was just a lovely family to be involved with.
You know? Jimmy, did you know?
I was delighted they were neighbours.
Well, very good.
Did you know there was another Crane in Clara?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, there's another Crane. Did you know that there was another Crane in Clara?
Another Crane?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to hear from him now. Well, we're actually going to take a little break then. We're going to take a 3 minute break. We're going to get a song that will bring you back to Hughes's pub, all right?
Just before you go away from the other Crane.
Oh yeah.
I've two little young fellas at home, Mary's two gossips.
Yeah.
And I'm their grandfather.
Right.
But there's no one has a Crane father. Only this fella.
Brilliant. Let's hear from Crane number two.
Well, Crane one, how was things? I'm just trying to organise mystery tour for the 27th of November. Gee, all I have is 50 seats. I can't make seats for you. Money needs to be in if you want to go. I'm up to my eyeballs at the moment. What do you mean? No, sure, I'm Tidy Towns as well. The more bags I fill, the more time on Little Town Media I get. I'm competing against Trevor Kavanagh, David Hyland and a few more. You know what I mean, Gee? Then I'm trying to wash windows. It's not easy at all. So trying to wash windows, organise a bus. And also, remember the time I used to make the burgers in Jimmy's? They were good value. Listen, kid, I have to go. Too much on me mind. Too much on me play. This mystery tour is a big thing. 27th of November. I'll be down to do your windows next week, ma'am. At Classic.
Well, Crane 1. Well, Jimmy. How are you keeping? This is just bringing me back to the past when we had the great times in your pub. Mystery tour weekends were unbelievable. The Saturday before it, the Sunday on the tour, and the Monday. Lamb hocks, you name it, we had it all. Take care, lads, and enjoy the show. Thank you.
Just yesterday morning, I didn't know you were gone. Suzanne. Out this morning, wrote down this song. Just can't remember who to send it to. I see fire and I see rain. Seeing sunny days, thought they'd never end. Friend, but I always thought that I'd see you.
turn toward the sun. Lord knows the cold wind blows, it'll turn your head around. It was hours of time on the telephone line to talk about things to come. Sweet dreams and flying machines and pieces on the ground. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. Seeing sunny days, thought they'd never end. I've seen lonely times, could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you. Lord knows the cold wind blows, it'll turn your head around. Well, there's hours of time on the telephone line to talk about things to come. Sweet dreams and flying machines and pieces on the ground.
What a song, what a singer. To me, that was the sound of Jimmy Hughes back then. I remember my brother Ivan used to bring me down. I was in maybe 12, 13, and Ivan would say to me, come on now, I wanted to hear the boys, Eamon and Jojo. My God, they were just...
Sure, if they were playing on a Saturday night, you had to be in the pub at 5 or 6 o'clock that evening to get a seat.
But like Jojo recorded that song especially for... I want to thank him. He recorded that song especially for this podcast. Oh, he said he'd do it for you, Jimmy. Very not nice. For you, Craig.
Oh, nice one.
No, but he wanted to do that for you.
That's so. Very nice. Yeah. I mean, going back, I mean, when I came to Clara first, Jojo and Johnny were this height, you know. And Jojo was playing the guitar from that stage. He wrote a song. I remember at the time, as he was maybe 10. He wrote a song about a soldier in the First World War. Fabulous song, you know. At that stage, you could see it was there, to come on. And then him and Eamon and Martin were doing a bit of practicing together. And I said, sure, I was listening to this, and I heard him at one stage. I heard something they sang, and maybe I had it recorded or something like that. And I said, sure, come on, why don't you come down below and start up? So this particular Friday night, they come down and start up, and the rest is history.
What a great trio.
Brilliant.
But like, a good double act.
Can I just clarify or what's the word I'm looking for? Correct. Crayon 2 there. Everything was spot on. I just want to clarify, he made a reference to the Mystery Tour, the 27th of November.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, coming out of lockdown, lads and numerous lads are going everywhere. So I had to bring the Mystery Tour back to the 20th, which didn't help. I had to bring it back to the 13th, which I discovered was a wedding in the pub. So we finally settled on the 6th of November. And the Mystery Tour is going out of the Trap Pub, courtesy of Jimmy and Angela, who's a great help, and have been to bands over the we've come out of lockdown, and a great bonus to the town. So I just want to let everybody know that's on this podcast or listening to it, the Mystery Tour is the 6th of November. And if you're interested in going, it's a male only. And I'm sorry, I don't want to offend women. There's nothing stopping women doing their own one. But if you're thinking of going, you've got to get your name to me because there's limited seats.
Jimmy, you had some great bands down in the pub. You had Ace, Trevor Kavanagh, started out there as well.
Well, I know he was playing, Richard Davis from Tullamore, him and the wife used to come over and play. We too,
Martin.
And then we had Jimmy Crowley up from Cork.
Wow.
Did you know about that?
No.
My brother Val had met him and knew of him through the folk scene and asked him would he be interested in, and said, hey, why not? And he came up this night and, geez, we had a great night one Sunday night.
We have another few pieces of audio here. Jimmy, one from your brother Ollie.
Hi, Jimmy. Just remembering when you took over the bar in Clara. It was a big challenge for you, but you were never afraid of a challenge. You were never afraid of hard work. And you were very, very, very lucky to have a great woman in Liz by your side. You had a great and the right personality for the job. You could talk to anybody about anything, in particular sport and your love of sport. We were all very proud of you, and in particular Daddy was, and he loved his visits over to you and his few pints and a few chats with the lads. You had a great some great characters in your pub, and none more so than Johnny behind the bar. And you can't mention Hughes's pub without mentioning Johnny. Deep down, Jimmy, we all know that you're still a true old blue. God bless.
Dodgy ground, dodgy ground.
What do you think of that, lads?
Get me off him, Lord. Get me off him.
Thanks, Ollie. That was nice there.
Yeah, grand.
Him, his brother, yeah. Brilliant, fair play.
Now, talking about my father, I remember, when he got sick, you know, he had been going along. He came home, retired in England, came home and got a job, first of all, with Lumley's, working in the cash and carry as a kind of a supervisor. And then he got a job in the hospital as a porter, see? So I worked in Williams at the time, and this morning I went into the supermarket, and here he is at the counter, a baby power, a nag and a paddy, a drop of vodka. He was buying all these baby powers. And I said, what are you doing this for? He says, for the boys' tea. I'd put a drop in their tea. I'm Dr. Hughes. Never mind surgery. I'm Dr. Hughes. I'm dishing it out.
Well, just in you calling Jimmy now a blue, there's another one that lived in Clara for years, Barney Cuskely, right? As he called himself a true blue. But I came down, as a matter of, I used to drink with Barney back then. But Clara was playing Tullamore in the senior semi-final the following Sunday. And I came downtown that Friday night waiting to meet Barney. And of course, him and Johnny had transpired while I was waiting to go down to my house in the green and completely bedecked in Tullamore flags and bunting. And I went home with whatever. I used to walk Barney home. He won't like that one. Just to make sure he got home to rail with you. And
you
then I went
down.
Home. And till I got to the house, Gagan's bushes or trees had blinded me. And when I turned from Gagan's trees and saw the house, I went ballistic. They even got up on the roof and had a flag in my chimney. True blue. You drink it with me all night. I never made a reference of it.
Classic. Yeah. Well, you know, I've had that up and down. I've had the situations where Clara and Tullamore came up. Actually, I was a selector on a minor team in 1996, 95 and 6 and 98. Pat Flanagan was asked to take over a minor team. And 95 and 96, I was a selector along with Noel Kelly and Seamus Fleming. And we met Tullamore in one of the finals. And that was it. I had to go into that Tullamore dressing room after Clara beating them and tell them how sorry I was and that I was a proud Tullamore man. But I was still proud that the lads that I worked with.
A blue tear running down his face.
Had won that final. And just on that one with Pat Flanagan, Pat had won those two, he as manager, had won those two minor, Clara won those two minor finals. And he went to train the senior team the following year. We got beaten in the semi-final by Forban up in the field. I'll never forget it, by a point or two. Forban won it. The following year, under Noel Brady, we won the minor. No club in Clara had won three minors. And I just thought there was an awful loss there that Pat hadn't been left for another year because he was, the lads loved him, you know, the Gossens loved him.
Yeah, we had a great podcast with Pat not too long ago. Yeah. Very popular. It was great to have Pat in. Lads, if you could go back, pick one night each to go back to right now. We're sitting in Hughes's and just click your fingers and you're back to a night that you loved. What would it be?
The best night, well, there's two, one quickly, right? One was always the Monday after the mystery tour. Because then the couples, the wives, girlfriends could come down and everyone partook.
Well, they were allowed, weren't they?
Right. But there's one that, Jimmy, we can't go without saying. Of course, Johnny, in the day, realised that it was your 10th anniversary and decided to have it on a Thursday night because there'd be a spillover into Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
Lovely.
Right? So we had an unbelievable Friday night or Thursday night. Great party. And lo and behold, a year later, I went into the pub and Johnny says to me, "We have a problem, G." I said, "What's that?" He said, "I looked at the calendar wrong." He says, "Well, it was only 9 year last year. This year's our official. What can we do? We have another 10th party."
Better than ever.
Bigger than ever.
Better than the year before.
I was dancing on the counter the next morning at 7:30 and Trish was going by the window going to work. And she saw me and she came round and she opened the door and she showed in. "Crane Slamming, you better have a dinner ready for me at dinner time." Great pub.
I was sweeping the floor the same morning. the curtains were still drawn. I was sweeping up, cleaning up after the night. And I said, what is Mary doing up? Mary passes me out going to school. Up the door.
So Jimmy, what was your favourite night, do you reckon? Or something that stands out?
Well, one of the big nights. And it had to be a huge night in the town. Now, and I'd be more of a GA man as such. But the night about Romania, Ireland in Romania, oh, Italia in 90.
Yeah.
The town.
Yeah, Mick White said that
the
as well.
Town. I could not believe what I saw when I looked out. Everyone poured out of the pubs. They were jammed, every one of them. And they formed, I don't know whether you know it or not, they formed this line from the square down to the mill house.
Yeah.
And they were up.
We're doing rock the boat.
Oh, rock the whole.
That's what we were doing. Rock the boat in the middle of the street. Traffic couldn't get either way.
It was unreal.
Unreal. You know,
it's hard to explain. The adrenaline.
Unreal. So, it was a buzz, yeah.
You know, mentioned Tricia there that you had to have the dinner ready for her. She said here, when we're in Good Buddies, those girls had a weekend in Tramore. Crane slept in the bar in Jimmy's after the mystery tour. And Liz covered him with a blanket.
Yeah, well, that was looked after you, even if you slept.
Just she covered a good few with blankets, in fairness, I'll be honest. Derek, Johnny came in one morning to open up, and the curtains were still drawn, and he came round to the window under the archway. And he went to pull the curtains and fell over. Derek was asleep on the couch.
Another lovely memory here from Leanne Bracken Kidney. Some great memories of Hughes's pub. I think my grandfather, Sean Bracken, instantly, he was part of the furniture. Always a smile, a pint and 20 gold bond. And I'm sitting with some of his sons and daughters singing Al Jolson. It was where we celebrated family occasions, birthdays, anniversary, football wins, parades, communions, confirmation, funerals, a lot. It was such great times and great memories. And
lovely. Very nice. Sean was fabulous. And he loved the card game. Sean had come in for a card game. And especially if there was a nine, it was a classic, if there was a nine over near the ladies' toilet, Patcho would be sitting in the corner. And when three lads had win the thing to play off, I'll have a pound on the green, I'll back Tootsie.
Yeah, you always back Sean, yeah.
Sean won one then to be a...
Oh, they're shouting and roaring, unbelievable, like in all Ireland.
Right, back to a couple of memories. Michael Carey said, watching Eilish pouring her first pint.
That's great.
Yeah. And a couple of people actually said, Eilish poured the best pint.
Yeah, well, that's unreal.
And that was a time, as I said to you, when it's not just pull the tap down. You had to pour it down the side of the glass, settle it properly. She was good at it.
Jimmy, what about the festivals then? Likes of the Queen of the Heather. That must have been massive back at the time.
They were absolutely.
But they were so well put together.
Yeah, well.
Ricey Scully at the
Ricey started off the whole thing, and I remember at the time he, in conjunction with Brian Cowan, they got in touch with Bord na Mána, and they wangled a great sponsorship from Bord na Mána for a Heather festival. And it was used to promote Bord na Mána products as well. So I do remember that when the weekend had started on the Thursday, this crew arrived from Bord na Mána up to the top of the green, you might remember it, and they set up a lovely flower show.
Yeah.
And it's all the products of Bord na Mána were there in sacks for sale. And they put on a display of stuff over the weekend, or maybe it was more than the weekend. Like that one person on his own, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, to organise it
because I was involved then for a few years after, and I knew what was involved and what he did in that year.
Sure, roses came from all over the world.
Yeah, yeah,
it's unreal.
He actually
even had her own radio station back
that's
then.
That's correct.
With the Rexes and John Lowe and all that.
So
TV station was on the TV.
After the first year, Ricey for some reason just said he wasn't able to go ahead with it again. But enough had been inspired by him so much. Got together, formed a committee, and we started up doing it to continue it.
I think Clara now needs a week like that in the summer. Whether it be, I don't know, the Queen of the Heather again, a Shane Lowry week, something. Yeah. You think
Give the town a boost.
Yeah,
and it, not alone did it boost, say, financially, that, but it boosted people's way of thinking and enjoying themselves. You know, they were looking forward to it. I mean, the street sports on a Tuesday and a Thursday, and the tug of war on a Wednesday. Unbelievable. The tug of war up on the
I remember it, Joe Riley and all of that.
Joe came out in his full regalia.
That was serious stuff.
Duffy's on the door, he's old.
Joe was brilliant. Now, the work that went into that, like, I got in touch with Oliver Bracken in New York, and he organised to send home a girl to represent New York 1 year. Kevin in London.
Kevin Cowan,
Kevin
Oh, sorry.
In London, Kevin
Fitzpatrick or Kevin Kelly.
Kevin Kelly. Yeah, Lord sorry. Mercy, Kevin. Yeah. He organised to send home a girl from London. And then Brian Sheridan and Kitty O'Mara and a couple of them went round loads of other places. We had it organised in advance that different towns would have nights. And would they mind if we went along and chose a girl from there to represent Ballycumber, Pulla, Tullamore, Mount Mellick. And the first year, in a races year, a girl from Burr won it. The second year, Michelle McEwan won it. And Michelle has gone on from that, not from that as such, but she had great ambitions in the aeronautics business at the time. Sorry, yeah. And she actually...
I'd like to have Michelle on if she's listening.
That'd be brilliant.
I'd like to, because she has really done well for herself. Yeah.
She's on my list.
She got it. She organised that a portion of sphagnum moss from the bog in Clara was put into space.
Imagine that. Unreal.
You know, and she's a great job now. She's, I think, Dean of the Faculty of Finance. Fantastic. In Athlone. Well done. So, well done to her.
Jim McEwan has a piece of moss in space, and Jimmy had us all in space in the 80s. So, him and Michelle have something in common.
As we have two little more pieces of audio here, Crane, you're up first. Your granddaughters, Ellen and Laura, have never listened to this.
Crane father.
Crane so much.
My name is Laura and I love Crane so much too.
He's our grandfather and he always brings us picking nuts.
And I love him.
And he always gets us sweets every day.
And we call him Crane.
What else do you call him?
And we call him Shy.
Well, everyone knows that. So.
Jimmy, over to you now. We have your grandson Daniel. Oh, and then we have Eilish who we're talking about. Oh.
Hi, Grand. I wish you thanks for teaching me home and then doing everything in the garden. Oh, I wish you bye.
Well, Dad, I know it was probably hard growing up in the pub and that, but because you worked long hours and hard work, and but you always made it seem easy, and you were always there for me and Mary, and had time for us, and made us feel happy and safe, and. Both of us, me and Mary, are so proud of you and Ma and what you've achieved and what you've overcome. We're so proud to call you Da, and we wouldn't be who we are today without you. We love you. Oh, and one thing I really miss about the pub, Crane's burgers on a Saturday, especially the curry flavoured ones.
So now, Eilish is after saying something there that surprised me. I thought I neglected the kids and I grown up. I mean, I'd be going up the stairs and I'd be passing Liz coming down to let me off maybe. And I know I didn't give as much time as I'd have liked to give. Yeah. And I'm hope I can make up for that with the grandkids now at the moment.
I think there's always something with parents. There's always a little bit of guilt. You know, you think I didn't give him enough time or that, you know. Yeah. But kids look at it differently. Yeah. Kids look at you and say, my dad is working his absolute backside off. Getting us to school, getting us to this. Yeah, that's something to be proud of.
Well, but Liz, in fairness to Liz, I mean, she put up with so much. She did the work upstairs in hard conditions. She was willing to come down and worked equally as hard downstairs. And as Crane said, she came down with food.
Stews, second to none.
Yes, you heard hocks.
Yeah.
Lamb hocks. Pig's feet.
Pig's feet.
Ribs, spare ribs. Yeah. Chips.
The best of stuff.
Chicken nuggets. Sausages. Yeah. Rasher.
Everything.
No one went out hungry over that place. And again, I have to come along and say thanks to all my sisters-in-law and brothers-in-law. Tina, Tricia, Mary Brennan. They were brilliant behind the counter. Tina, Colette. They helped out with so much of the work. Jojo and Jer, anything we wanted, you know, they were there. The family was there for us, and I want to thank them all.
That's lovely, Jimmy, Of course, Jimmy, but as a publican, you're also a counsellor. You know what I mean? You're a psychiatrist. I mean, but you know everybody intimately. You know what's happening at home, you know what I mean? What's happening at work, you know what I mean? You really take that, but I think you have to be kind of a special person like that, you know, behind the bar.
Well, now that you say that, I often thought, I mean, John B. Keane, where do you think he got his stories?
Wouldn't you love to be able to relate
the stories that you've, there's an awful lot of them you couldn't tell. If you were going to write them, you'd have to wait for 100 years to tell, you know. But a famous, just a small little short one about Patcha. Patcha was explaining about when he started going out with a wife, you know, as a girlfriend. And I told me, Ma, I was going out with this girl. And after a while, I come in and I says, Ma, myself and herself is going to get married. And she says, Pat, did you get that little woman in trouble? Not yet, says Pa.
God. Jimmy, before we finish up, we're going to do a quick fire round with you, okay?
Oh, Jesus.
So the first thing that comes into your head, okay? We have a £1 million question at the end, and Crane is going to be your phone a friend on this one, right? So
we'll
be concentrating now, okay? First thing you'd buy if you won the lotto?
A new car.
Best thing about Clara?
Oh, the people.
Best thing about Tullamore?
The people.
What actor would play you in a movie?
Oh, jeez, no. I'd want to be a magician.
What's your favourite song?
Well, I like Dire Straits. I remember that time.
First car you ever bought?
An Escort, a blue Escort.
Best card player you've ever played with?
He might be sitting beside me. John Moran was a very good card player.
First movie you've ever seen?
Roy Rogers.
Worst present you ever got?
Jesus. A pen.
Well, the last one is a £1 million question. I'm going to give that over to you now. This is sponsored by DG Transport in Tullamore, so the check will be ready. And thanks to the lads for sponsoring this podcast. Right. Which of these is not one of the American Triple Crown horse races? Is not A. Arrington Million, B. Belmont Stakes, C. Kentucky Derby, or D. Preakness Stakes? Which of them is not one of the American Triple Horse races?
The first one, I think.
Now, you have a phone a friend as well. £1 million now. Is it going to be this?
I think the first one, the Arrington.
Jimmy, is this your final answer?
Yeah.
You sure?
You
sure?
I'll stick with it.
Well, you're right. Won a virtual £1 million.
Did we virtually split that?
Is there a pub for sale in Clara?
We'll struggle to get one like that one, Jimmy.
Crane, have you something about the spire you said to me or something that you wanted to tell?
Right. It's a joke.
Right. We like jokes.
This actually really happened. Oh, now, numerous people in Clara I would have told this, but I'll never have as big an audience.
Now this is on tape forever.
Yeah, I'll never have this big as audience again. And excuse me, I won't actually swear like a person in it did. I'll make up for it. Anyway, when the spire was being built in Dublin back in the day, they had two parts of it constructed when they realised that there wasn't a crane in the country big enough to put the third part up. So work was put on hold. They had to bring in a crane from Europe. And when it came in, to get the arch, it had to go so far down Connell Street, it was directly in front of Clary's. And Clary's, because of the plate glass windows, complained to the local council. So there was a partition put up. So between the crane and the partition, there was a disturbance on Connell Street. So after a week anyway, the spire was completed. The crane was going back to Europe and the partition was taken down. About a month later, I was in Quebec. I was getting the early bus to Dublin. And when I got on the bus, the driver had the radio already on, but the Gerry Ryan show just started. And Gerry Ryan said, right, folks, anybody living or visiting Dublin City Centre and want to go, would be familiar with the disturbance with the crane and the partition. So this company are giving a tremendous spot prize for anyone that can come up with a song, a poem, a ditty, anything regarding the events. So Gerry Ryan played a song and someone rang in. We're coming in by the Spa Hotel and he has 6 or 7 entries. And he says, right, folks, we're taking a break. And when we come back, we're going politics. So when he came back on, he said, we've a caller straight away. He said, who is it? He said, it's me, Ciarán Ballyferma. He says, and what political party are you aligned to? Oh, he said, beep, beep, that's she. He says, I'm ringing about the bleeding spire. Oh, no, says Jerry, sorry, we've moved on from that. And your man again went, beep, beep, for Jesus' sake, he said, it's the spire thing. And Jerry says, I'm sorry, we've moved on from that. And then there's a pause in the studio, and obviously somebody gives Jerry the go-ahead. And Jerry says, all right, the powers to be have decided to hear what you have to offer. All right, that's great, says Mickey, he's ready. Yes, says Jerry, come on, the whole country's waiting. Give me a minute, will you? I'm ready, he's ready. Right, here goes. We can see clear, he's now, the crane is gone. I like our reaction here. Everybody bursted out laughing. When everyone had finished, Jerry Ryan says the prize is on its way to Ballyferma.
Very good.
Yeah. So, here's
my... Excellent.
Yeah.
That's, you know, unfortunately, we're running out of time. Do you know what I mean? That's just the way it goes. It's a podcast. They do fly. Do you know what I mean?
We
and we're trying to get through as much as we can.
Yeah.
But that's not to say you can't come back.
Oh, sure. We'll wait.
There could be a part two, a part three.
For the reaction.
I have to get Danny back in for a part two. My father definitely for a part two. So that's the way.
We've enough room where we can play a 9 and you can record as well when we're playing tonight.
Brilliant. That'll be some podcast.
Hello.
Have you time for one further joke that Danny played on a particular gentleman who will remain nameless now? The man was working, not in Clara, he was working for this big firm and he was coming near his retirement age. So Johnny says to him, now, hold on now. I'm calling him by his name. He says, don't just go up to the doctor and get a cert to say you're sick. Tell him you're sick. You get a cert, you continue signing on, you get your money before you go on your pension. Because he'd have got an awful lot less money. So we go, I might do that. So the man went off and done what Johnny told him, arrived in the next day and sat at the counter. Johnny Bracken, you're some fucker. What's wrong? Calling him again. I done what you told me. Went up to that man, stripped me off, tested me heart, bet me back, pulled me asunder, made me kneel up on the table, stuck his finger up me arse, and told me to get out of town. I was the healthiest man in the town. And ironically, that man is still alive.
Wow.
That's 35 years ago.
That's unbelievable.
And he's still taking the soap I met him last week.
Johnny set him up.
Johnny set him up.
Well, actually, that's what Hughes's pub back in the day was the hub for all the jokes. Because Brendan Kinney back in the 80s, you worked for Brendan yourself, right?
I did.
And he'd have lads working all around the country. And every Friday they'd come back, get their wages, and they'd come into Jimmy Hughes's. And they'd be relaying all the jokes they'd heard from around different parts of the country. And there's one joke that we're just talking about, Johnny. I remember him saying to me, he says, Crane Slamming, he says, you with your memory, remember this joke, he says, because it'll go down in history. Okay? There's a fact before the joke. Niki Lauda was the famous great racing driver in the 70s. And he was still driving Grand Prix. He had a serious accident. He broke multiple bones, so much burnt, and he lost his left ear. But anyway, as the joke goes, he was still driving Grand Prix and he advertised for a new pit stop team. And three fellas applied for the job, English, Irish and Scottish. So the day of the interviews anyway, he was sitting behind the desk and the first guy in was the English guy. And the English guy, Nicky says to him, now he says, you know why you're here? He said, my pit stop team is retiring. They could get me back on track in 20 seconds. Can you better that? The English guy said, we'll have you out in 18 seconds. That's very good, says Nicky. He said, how observant are you? And he copped, he says, you've only one ear. He says, brilliant. He says, name, address, phone number. If it's you, we'll be in touch. Next guy is a Scottish guy. Nicky says, you know why you're here? He said, my pit stop team is retiring. They could get me back on track in 20 seconds. The English guy has been in and said, 18 seconds. Can you better that? He said, we'll have you out in 16 seconds. Brilliant. He said, how observant are you? He says, you've only one ear. Name, address, phone number. If it's you, we'll be in touch. The last lad in is the Irish fella. And Nicky says to him, now, he says, you know why you're here? He said, my pit stop team is retiring. He says, they could get me back on track in 20 seconds. I have to warn you, he says, you're up again it. The English guy was in and said 18, the Scottish guy said 16, can you better that? Well, Jesus, Paddy, myself and the lads, I'll have you up in 10 seconds for that. Jesus, Nicky, that's brilliant. He said, oh, observant are you? And Paddy pushed back the chair and got in under the table, looked at his feet, looked at his knees, looked at his chest. He looked him straight into the face. He said, you're wearing contact lens. Jesus, Nicky, that's unbelievable. How'd you figure that out? He said, if you had two fucking ears, you'd be wearing a pair of glasses. And that joke has been told anywhere I've gone. I was in Vegas a few years ago and I told the car table in Vegas. They were from our parts of the world. And
that's a podcast in itself, Vegas. It? Right, Jimmy, I want to ask you before we finish up, and Crane, I suppose, well, do you ever sit at home and thinking, you know, I'd like to be back there for one night, just have a night? I know you mentioned your favourite nights, but you're at home. Would you like to be in the thick of the action behind the bar, or... is there any regrets?
No, I have no regrets, I'll be honest. Well, maybe about some of the ways I carried on myself, but no regrets about the business.
We'll do another podcast on that,
Jerry. Have to bring back Jerry Rain for that.
No, but no, I haven't, but I wouldn't want to go back, though. No. I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
But everyone I speak to in the town, as the customers, would all know, and even people that have never been customers, the younger crowd, judging by the stories that they hear us saying, would love to experience.
Yeah, just experience.
And I and Jimmy's.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, even myself, I was probably a little bit too young. But yeah. I was there.
Yeah, maybe Derek me starting off the day and maybe me throwing out a few burgers and Liz pegging out the stew and the hocks.
The different thing.
Actually, I was in Jimmy's one night, sorry that Derek was there, and I was a bit interested in a bit of DJing, you know?
And I always watched
Derek and Barry Flynn, Davey McGrath.
The ropes.
Anyway, I was always interested in what somebody was going to start with, right? So I was waiting for this, you know? And, Derek started with Tin Lizzy Old Town. This boy is cracking up. And he just set the scene.
Yeah.
I was thinking, Jesus, I'd never think of that.
Yeah. Sure, Derry going to look around him. Everyone in the pub was cracking up.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
In fairness.
That's any advice for the younger generation, maybe your grandkids now growing up, that they could be listening to this in a good few years? So.
Well, sure. Grandkids, listen to their parents and try and do the right thing, you know, as you're growing up, get an education, because that's what the world is coming to now. You know, stay away from the obvious stuff. You know, there's a lot of that out there, unfortunately. We see it with our own eyes. Try and avoid the drugs. You know, and get involved in sport.
Oh, I'd agree with that.
Big time. Because I, like Jimmy did it and I did it, and I can vouch for most of the kids that went through my hands and Jimmy's hands. Once they were kicking a ball, whichever it was, soccer, rugby, GAA and hurling, they all more or less turned out okay.
Yeah, well, I found that involved with young people. I loved it. I loved to be with the young people.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
And it probably stood to me the fact that I had lads of my own. Because I saw people with sons on teams. And
The gel is unreal. Yeah.
And the kids don't probably operate properly under their parents. And like about the outside stuff. Yeah. And everyone's at it now. Cycling, walking.
Yeah, do more of that.
I do a bit of gardening. And the two gossens come out and they're pottering around. And they know where the potatoes are. And
different than my grandkids. You know, for any grandparents out there, bring them picking nuts or a mushroom and show them what we all did.
Jimmy, what's your other grandsons? We mentioned Daniel.
Connor.
Daniel and Connor.
Yeah. Connor's asleep
now. Caitlin, my other granddaughter.
And Caitlin, we forgot about Caitlin.
Get them all in.
All that covered,
Before I finish, I wanted to just, everyone knows it, but I just want to reiterate it. Jimmy Hughes might have been on over the door, but Johnny Bracken was behind the counter, I have to say.
That's everybody
came in to see Johnny. Absolutely. He covered my ass when I went AWOL on quite a number of occasions, you know.
And that's my that's when Jimmy became Shamey. And that was our password.
I heard about Shamey.
That was our password.
And then, without Liz, it just was not possible.
Lads, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
Brilliant.
I know we didn't get through everything, but we definitely will come back to this because I know people are going to be loved it. Get the boys back in, get them in.
Whatever.
So we will.
Yeah.
Okay.
No bother.
Lads, thanks a million. Appreciate it.
All right.
It. Okay.
That's brilliant.
Thanks,
Lonnie.
Thank you. Bye. I
just listened to What's the Story with Lloyd Bracken. Check out all our social channels for info on new episodes. Oh, and thanks for listening. Honda Town.